17th of December 2019, the 19th of Kislev. Yep. Oh, Yud Tes Kislev is today. Okay, that's a special yontif for Chabad. So
Yud Tes. Oh, Yud
Tes. But all these years, all these years showing up, and where is everyone?
It's not the Meyer, right? Because I went to one of the celebrations last night.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that, oh my God.
Yes, yes. Okay, so there is a pasuk here. So in the beginning, so this parak opens up, parak Zayin Halacha Day, but it opens up with Hashem is going to bring you into the lands which you're going to conquer, and you're going to have to erase all of the nations from in front of you. Hashem will place them in front of you, will destroy them, and you shouldn't make any peace with them. Lo tichros lahem bris v'lo tichanim. And you shouldn't be tichanim. Anybody have a chumash open? Pasuk Beis has to translate lo tichanim. What? Oh, lo tichanim. The official translation in the stone chumash is. There it is. You shall not show them favor. Okay, you shall not show them favor. And then the next pasuk is lo sischatin bam. You shall not marry them. Bidcha lo titen livno, bita lo tikach livnotcha. You shouldn't permit any intermarriage. So the Gemara comes along and tells us, what do we learn now from this pasuk? Lo tichanim, lo titen lahem chaniya bekarka. You shouldn't give them a rest on the land. You shouldn't give them a place to rest. V'lo titen lahem chain. You shall not show them favor. That you shall not give them a free gift. You shall not give them a free gift. So the Gemara then asks, how can you learn out all three of those from the same pasuk? And the Gemara explains that it could have been written in a slightly different way, and the fact that it's written in this particular way indicates that we get all these three mitzvahs out of them. And it sounds like they're all biblical injunctions. One can make a case that maybe it's only an asmachta, but it sounds like these are supposed to be mitzvahs d'oraisa, and they are recorded as such. There is a mitzvah, the mitzvah is recorded as lo techanim, including these three things, right? What are the three things? Again, you shall not give them land, you shall not give them chen, you shall not show them like a favor, and nor shall you give them a free gift. So that's the deal. Now, this obviously has very significant repercussions. If one is going to say this is a full halacha, what does that tell us? This tells us that you're not allowed to sell land. I mean, one is not to give them compliments. That's one question, it sounds like. In fact, I heard that Rav Belsky held that one should not wear jerseys of players that have their name and number on it, because that would be a violation of lo sechanim. That would be a violation of showing favor to non-Jews. That's out there. And what's the last one? You shall not give them any type of gift. So those are pretty significant. Perhaps the most politically charged is the first one. You shall not sell them land. It sounds like there's a prohibition of selling land to non-Jews in Eretz Yisrael. So this hit the, actually already a couple years ago, like I think 2010, 2011, there was a bit of a brouhaha that one of the rabbanim of one of the cities prohibited even renting property to non-Jews. We'll get to that a little bit later. So you're not allowed to rent to non-Jews, and invoked this pasuk of in Israel. This is only in Israel, not outside of Israel. In Israel, and that would be a violation of lo techanim. So is it, isn't it, how does it apply bizman hazeh? So the first question that one must ask is, who does this prohibition apply to? Does this apply to, and forget, before we get to the modern day, just what does the Gemara say that it refers to? Because in the Gemara there were Jews and there were non-Jews. Those non-Jews were violators of Avodah Zarah. That was the assumption. Now there was a middle ground. Who were those middle ground? The middle ground could be people that were ger toshav, that people that said we're going to live in Eretz Yisrael, we're going to follow Hashem mitzvei Noach, and they made a declaration as such. Now is that going to extend bizman hazeh? So is that going to extend bizman hazeh? So that is a question. That's a question that is out there with regards to whether we can have a concept of a ger toshav bizman hazeh. Okay, we'll get to that shortly. But just the Gemara itself, it doesn't say one way what's the other way of reading it? I mean, and then there's another category of non-Jews that is out there, which is treated the most strictly of all of them. and that is the Sheva Mitzvah, the Sheva Amimim, the seven nations of the land of Israel. Those seem to be treated the worst. And if one were to just read it out of the Pasuk, who would I assume that this halacha applies to of those all those categories? It would apply. It sounds like it's only referring to the seven nations. That's the topic that is being discussed. The topic being discussed is when you come into the land of Israel and you're going to have to kick out these seven nations, you shouldn't make any pact with them, below Techanim, and you shall not do those three things listed in this Gemara. And what's the next Pasuk? The next Pasuk is Lo Tischatin Bam, and you shall not intermarry with them. Who does that prohibition apply to? So we read this yesterday. The Rambam said that it applies to everyone. But other Rishonim disagree that this prohibition, the explicit prohibition in the Torah of having intermarriage, is only a prohibition with the seven nations, not with the other nations. What's the prohibition of intermarriage? Otherwise, check out the shiur we gave a few months ago when we learned Parshas Balak. So Tosfos comes along on this page in Avodah Zarah and raises this question. He says, Darish Nami Mihai Kra B'Samach Shelo Litein Lahem Chein. We also learn from this passage that one should not give them any favor. V'Shelo Litein Lahem Matnas Chein. We shall not give them any free presents. V'Stama D'Milsa Mairi B'Kulhu Ovdei Kolchavim. And Tosfos says that this apparently is referring not just to the seven nations or any specific type of non-Jew, but rather it refers to all non-Jews. And that's the prohibition. V'chein mashu b'sugin b'samach, that's what it sounds like. V'kasha, then he asks the question. He says, but wait a second, we have plenty of other...
But it's an idol worship. Did it say non-Jews?
Well, he says, b'cholu ovdei kolchavim. That's his rule. Now, ovdei kolchavim, does that mean all non-Jews or not? Okay, let's hold off on that distinction. Let's work on Tosa's distinction now. Yeah.
Is it whether or not they convert?
No, if they convert, they're Jewish. That's not a question.
Because in some instances we're not allowed to marry even if they do convert, you know, like the Moabites or something. You know?
What?
They can't marry like a Moabite even if they do convert.
Yeah, So the Tosfos actually raises that issue. Tosfos here in the middle says that with regards to the intermarriage case, he says, why would that only apply to the seven nations? And again, it's not so clear it does, but at least Tosfos held that it did. Tosfos held that only applies to seven nations. He says, well, because anyone else could convert. Now, I don't know why you wouldn't, except because other than the seven nations, they can't. That's the way he says it. And he says, and there's other people also that for whatever reason can't come in. Now, I'm not sure why he... Okay, whatever. That's what Tosfos says. Tosfos responds by saying, he says, yeah, but all those other cases, there is an exclusionary factor. By all those other cases, there's a reason why we say it only applies to the seven nations. But outside of any of those, if you're not going to use any of those exceptions, so then the rule is all ovdei kolchavim. Now, right, we're quick to say, wait a second, Ovdei Kolchavim, is that only applied to Ovdei Kolchavim, not to Ovdei Kolchavim? So that's a question we'll get to shortly. But that's the position of Tosfos, that it applies to everyone, that applies to all non-Jews. Now, the Torah Tamima here, I didn't see, and I got here, I told Rabbi Ginsman I can't start teaching before 11 o'clock. And I forgot that on Tuesdays I get, my TA is the period's a little bit earlier. So I had a few minutes to take a look at something. So I did take a look in the Masifta Gemara. And he doesn't quote anyone disagreeing with Tosfos. He doesn't quote anyone saying that it should only apply to, that maybe it should only apply to the seven nations. But the Torah Tamima does. And it's odd. Torah Tamima is in the last century. And I'll tell you what he says. He says, Retzel Lomer, you shouldn't sell any houses or fields in Eretz Yisrael. So that they shouldn't have a place to reside. Shim lo yelahem tiyah yeshiva sa yeshiva sarai. But if they don't have a place to live, then any living that non-Jews would do in Eretz Yisrael is going to be temporary, and that will be okay. And then he says, va'ayri b'shiva amimin, v'chapashtus ha'kosu v'akodmus nashal goyim rabim, achit v'agashi v'chein ba'ad rashu shiva samach. And it's talking about the seven nations. That's what the Torah Tamima says. But Tosfos kasvu derak yisur krisus bris ayri b'shivas amim. Tosfos says, no. It's only the idea of not making a peace pact with them. That applies to the seven nations. Avalavin elu shavin b'chol evdei chavin. But these prohibitions apply to everyone. V'chasu kein al pi svara levad. But he is saying it based on svara. Now, it's not what does svara mean? I mean, what is svara? Svara is logic. Meaning he's making a logical statement based on his logic. Now, it's not exactly that. Tosfos says gives a little bit more. He seems to say that this is there's no textual exclusion. But anyways, he's saying that's his idea. He doesn't have a proof. He doesn't have a positive proof to that idea. He just has a negative proof that it isn't. Okay, aval daiti zekasha tuva. He says, but I don't understand Tosfos. I have a lot of questions on it. Achrei the ain suffek the pasuk ze airi b'shivas amim. The pasuk seems to talk about the seven nations. Uimenu halo yalfino lechol hani drushos, and that's what we should use for all these drushos. The gam kasha l'dibrei Tosfos mikol makom b'shaskem etzino heter nesinas lo v'tikachavim kemoshen navi b'samach. And he says not only that, but there's plenty of examples in the Gemara of people giving gifts to non-Jews. That it happens. Now, Tosfos acknowledges that. It's a pretty lengthy Tosfos we're reading from. So he says in the middle, no, it's going to apply to all non-Jews. And he says, what about these old Gemaras? He lists off 3-4 Gemaras where it seems like there's a gift being given to non-Jews. And he gives some kind of reason why it's not going to, why it doesn't apply. But that is the shita that Tosfos gives. So aval dvarenu, where are we here? Vegam kash liver tosos to come up with shat shmat sinu hetter nesiz lo vigam kovach nevi usal va kandar shinu isur dvar zeh aval dvar mishashi. But if to me, you don't have to give any difficult answers to those questions that are being those being raised by Tosos from other places. Just say it only applies to seven nations; doesn't apply elsewhere. Okay, so that's the shita of the Torah Tamima. He gives some examples of when the heter might apply, meaning if it's for our benefit, you could give a gift. So if you're like some kind of gift exchange at an office party this time of year, and everyone's putting in a gift, now remove the avodah zarah aspect from it. Just if you take out, it's just called a holiday party, and everyone puts in a gift, so it sounds like it would be mutter. It's not a problem of giving a gift to non-Jew if the explicit point is I'm giving you something and I'm getting something back in return. This was an issue that we discussed last night in our Shulchan Aruch Shir. The issue there, sort of the flip side of this, is that there's also a prohibition of accepting tzedakah from non-Jews. There is several Gemaras that indicate this idea that one is not supposed to accept charity. It's unclear whether, well, there's two Gemaras. One seems to refer to all non-Jews. Another one refers to specifically non-Jewish governments. Right, but neither one should be acceptable. So that one of the which raises significant challenges, especially in Israel today, they're accepting a lot of tzedakah, a lot of support is coming from Christian groups and things like that. So does that make it? So one of the things that it said is there's an exchange. I mean, very often when non-Jews give money, they want the kavod, they want the honor, they're getting something out of it. So maybe then it becomes permissible. Another thing that I suggested last night is that it's unclear what kind of support for Israel is actually considered tzedakah. Meaning, if a Christian group gives money to people making aliyah, right? So is that tzedakah? I'm not sure that's tzedakah. That might be like a gift, a grant, or something. And matanos are actually permitted. I mean, it's only tzedakah that's prohibited. Matanos are okay.
Distinguish from a matana.
It sounds like what I read, and I didn't see anybody that really made this distinction for this case. But I thought one could distinguish and say tzedakah is when supporting the poor. So that the Gemara, the Rishonim used the language of a chil Hashem. That's a chil Hashem that if we have poor people, then we need to reach out to non-Jews for support. But in the case where it's like a gift, it's not really, you know, supporting yeshiva is not really supporting the poor. It's supporting Jews making aliyah. It's not really supporting the poor. It's supporting, you know, it's putting money into something that you want to see happen. So then maybe it might be more reasons to permit it. Yeah.
Where do these big fundamentalist groups give most of their money to?
They all over the place. I mean, there is an organization, ICJF, which was run by an Orthodox rabbi, Yayu Musmach. He passed away a year or two ago, but you know, it was raising something like $100 million a year. And they were distributing it. Some of it was there were individual grants that people got for making aliyah. Sometimes they were sometimes they're inserting it into the welfare systems. They're supporting various institutions. You know, it was like you know, you apply to a federation for a grant, you could apply to this for a grant.
They went from Christian groups.
What?
They went from Christian groups. This money.
ICJF, the International Christian Jewish Fellowship. Oh yeah. fine. So that's so. What's the story then now? So what's the story nowadays with selling land or renting? Let's start with that issue that what they came out against those years ago. So the truth is, renting land is unclear whether that's prohibited. Renting land, in fact, the Gemara seems to indicate that it might be permitted, that you're renting the land, but you really have the ability to send them out, and therefore that's not really going to be a violation of lo sachanim. The only problem with saying that, if we're going to take a lenient position with renting land to non-Jews, so then you'd have to take, what are you saying? You're saying that, oh, if they're renting, it's really my house that they're renting. That's what you're saying. It's really my house. The problem with that is that there is a Ramah. The Ramah tells us in Simen Kuf Nun Aleph Sif Yud that even in a place where you're permitted to rent land to non-Jews, you shouldn't give them a place to live. Why? Because they're going to bring in their idols. So comes the Ramah, that's actually the Machaber writing in Eretz Yisrael, comes the Ramah writing in Europe. He says, Va'idna, nowadays, Nogu lahaskar afladir, will rent to them places to live. Why? Kimish ein nogin lahaknas avodah zara b'veitayim, because they don't bring avodah zara in. Hasokher b'vayis migoy, v'yish lahachmir shalom niyach sham avodah zara shalgoy. And they're those that are machmer on this, they shouldn't bring avodah zara goy. But they don't bring in their avodah zara into their houses anymore. So therefore, it suggests the Ramah that it might be permissible. Now, one could still make... Okay. Comes the Shach, however, and says, Kasha, I have a problem. Because we see that they do. Now, you could say they're living at historically different times. They lived, I think, 150 years apart or so. But the Shach lived later. Right? So what exactly is he saying? The Ramah is saying, oh, we don't see... They don't bring Avodah Zarah into the house. And the Shach says, what do you mean? We see that they are. And they're both living approximately the same place. The Ramah lived in Krakow, southern Poland, and the Shach lived in, anyone know? Shach actually lived in a few places. He was running away from the Chmielnytsky massacres, but he ended up in Vilna, actually. Before Vilna, like one of the first people in the rabbinic world that ended up in Vilna. But he says we see that it is happening that they're bringing stuff into the houses. So perhaps the shaila is they're really having machlokas about the same thing, right? What is the halachic attitude towards a crucifix? What is a crucifix, right? A cross with the guy hanging on it, right? So what is that? Is that avodah zarah or is it not? Is that an idol?
It's avodah zarah.
You think it's avodah zarah?
They bend down, they pray to it.
Yeah.
In today's day and age, a lot of people think that Christianity is not avodah zarah anyway.
Oh, so hold off on that. So it's that might be the machlokas, Ramah and Shach, whether that's considered an idol or not. I mean, I'm not sure anybody said, even though they might pray to it, they're not really praying to it as a god. I think they're praying to it as sort of a symbol of something else that's
like
out there.
Shrine, they go and pray the shrine.
Yeah, so is that considered avodah zarah? Is not considered avodah zarah? So that itself is a somewhat of an open question. But anyways, so you have to somehow sort of thread the needle and say, yeah, they are, when we're renting them, we're still the ones that own it, as opposed to that, well, we don't own it to the point that we have a problem with the avodah zarah coming in. Now, I think it's not so hard to thread that needle, because if the whole prohibition of lo sachanim is that we don't want to give them a place to live, so we could say, oh, it's totally yours, but it's going to be totally yours only up to a point. This actually has major implications in other areas of halacha. For instance, Hilchos Mezuzah. What does Hilchos Mezuzah have to do with any of these things? So the halacha tells us, the Gemara says, that if you're renting a home in Chutz La'aretz, in Eretz Yisrael you should do it right away. But in Chutz La'aretz, if you're renting a home, you get 30 days to put up your mezuzah. Not if you own a home. This is a big misconception. People call me all the time. Our 30 days are running out. Like, yeah, but... We just bought a house 3 weeks ago, and our 30 days are running out. It's like, oh, doesn't work that way, right? You got to get it up today, right? But when it comes to renting, on the books, you get 30 days. So many poskim say that it doesn't apply b'zman hazeh either. Why? Because what is it? What's the deal with the 30 days? That's because back in the time of the Gemara, the rental agreements were that we're renting to you this place. You'll be here until we kick you out. Like, we have the right, even though you might sign a year lease, we have the right at any time to kick you out. So, for example, if the owner rents a place to a renter, and then the owner's house burns down, the rules were is that the owner could go to the renter and say, get out, you know, our house burns out, you're leaving. Nowadays, could you do that? No. Nowadays, if you have a lease, you have a lease. You're not going anywhere. So therefore, many poskim assume that the mitzvah of putting up the mezuzah would stay right away. But that gets to the same issue of what exactly is a rental. Is a rental considered as if you live there, or considered as if you don't? Okay, just to get on to a couple of other Lo Sechanim related topics. So there is a the idea of not giving them a compliment, or not giving them perhaps a tefillah. So there is a Magin Avram that appears in Or HaChaim, Kuf Tzadi Tes Aleph, that says that when you're benching in the house of a non-Jew, so what do you say? You say, Ken Yivarechu Sanu Kulanu Yachad. That's a line in benching. Ken Yivarechu Sanu Kulanu Yachad Bivracha Shalema V'nomara. So what do those words mean? Ken Yivarechu Sanu, that you should give us a bracha, all of us, together. If you're benching in the house of a non-Jew, so you're saying, let us all get a bracha. So you're asking for a bracha on behalf of non-Jews. Right? So comes the Magen Avraham and says, you should say, Kin Yivarech Osanu Kulanu Yachad B'nei Bris V'no Mar Amin. You should give a bracha to all of us, those of, that are the B'nei Bris, that are part of the pact, that are part of the Jewish people. The Taz disagrees and says, oh, wait a second. Once you've already said, Ken Yivarech Osanu Kulanu Yachad, you've already violated the din. So you're going to say B'nei Bris afterwards, but you already violated it a second before by saying we're all going to be Bris. So therefore he says it should be Ken Yivarech Osanu B'nei Bris Kulanu. Ken Yivarech B'nei Bris Osanu Kulanu Yachad. I think that's what he says. That you should switch it to make it a little earlier in the line. So that is suggested by the Magen Avraham. It's interesting to note that that is not quoted in the Aruch HaShulchan or quoted in the Mishnah Berurah, but it is quoted on the page of the Mishnah Berurah in the Shari Tshuva and the Be'er Heite. Both of them quote this rule. In fact, it is invoked in the Sefer Piskei Tshuvos. He says, he quotes from the Be'er Heitiv, Kishyesh Nachru Vivayis Noagin Lomer Kulanu Yachad B'nei Bris, because of Atash She'en, that's not correct, the Kimon Shem Kulanu Yachad HaKol B'chlal, rather what you say, Usanu B'nei Bris Kulanu Yachad. So V'yeshem Mevim B'shem El Yerab B'shem HaKobo L'yashim Nusach Ol Kulanu Yachad B'nei Bris, that most people seem to hold like the Magen Avraham. Was immediately, right afterwards, you're saying B'nei Bris, so that's going to be sufficient. But either way, he doesn't comment on this, that, oh, you see the Mishnah Berurah and Aruch HaShulchan say not to do it, rather you should go ahead and do it, or rather you shouldn't do it, rather you don't have to do this, right? The implication is that that's the way he seems to be assuming, is that that's the halacha. Now, is that really the case? That we don't, that we're really, we'd absolutely not give a bracha to non-Jews? So there is an article, I found this on the Torah Musings website by a Yale student, so he has an article of this, and he actually puts it in the context of the earthquake that took place in Haiti, remember that? So he says, is it okay to A, give tzedakah, and B, to daven on behalf of the victims of that earthquake? That's the question that he raises. So he invokes, and this Bruce has been alluding to several times, is it true that maybe this only applies to Ovdei Kochavim? Does it actually apply to non-Jews today? That is the question that is out there, and it's a big question that is out there. There is a so one suggestion is that you are. This actually came up last night in the shiur. I wish I would have seen this makor last night. The Rambam explicitly writes. Actually, when it comes to receiving tzedakah, the Aruch HaShulchan makes a comment. He says, nowadays you look around and you see that everybody is accepts tzedakah from non-Jews. So it could be the Aruch HaShulchan. So he says, I'll give you two reasons why that's the case. He says, number one, because we really need the money. Right? And what I really need the money isn't the heter for these things. But in fact, in the Gemara, it says that if you really need the money, that you're allowed to take it. Apparently, I guess maybe this wouldn't be a chilah. I don't know. Everybody was so extremely poor that they really needed it, and therefore it would be considered. Okay. He says that, and also, the Rambam seems to say that it's okay, assuming that the people aren't Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Now, the Rambam doesn't exactly say that. The Rambam says that in Hilchos, in all the way at the very end of the Rambam talks about the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, all the way at the end of Hilchos Malachim. So he talks about keeping the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, and then he adds a line, he says, and by the way, any non-Jew who wants to keep, if they want to keep any of the other mitzvos, they're allowed to do that too. And what's the example that the Rambam gives as a mitzvah that a non-Jew would want to do? To give tzedakah. That's what the Rambam says. But The Rambam seems to only be limiting it to a ger tosha. What is a ger tosha? So we mentioned this before. Somebody who has accepted the shevetz of Bnei Noach, and not only just accepted it, but the Rambam seems to say accepted it in front of Beis Din. And the Rambam even adds in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, that unless they that they have to do it in front of a Beis Din, and if during, and it won't happen bizman she'in yovel noheg. Unless Yovel is exists during that time, meaning we have to have the full government operating during that time in order for it to be applicable. So that's a that's a pretty high threshold. The Ravid, however, disagrees. The Ravid says, no, I don't think that that's a, you could have a case of a Ger Toshav type person even in the absence of that, and there is a long comment here in the Sefer Perech Matei Aaron. The Sefer Perech Matei Aaron, written by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Who's Rav Aaron Soloveitchik? You don't quote him that much.
Brother.
We quote his brother a lot more, right? Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik's younger, much younger brother. I think he was younger by, I think, more than 10 years. Actually, which means that they have very different childhoods. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik actually mostly grew up in America. I didn't check the biography exactly. Yosef Dov grew up in Europe, learned by his father, even learned by his grandfather to some extent, and went to university in Berlin, and then came to America. His brother, Aaron, came with his father, I think earlier, and grew up in America. His tutor, anybody know who his tutor was? You know this? His tutor was Rav Yitzchak Kutner. Rav Yitzchak Kutner pulled him aside and worked with Rav Aaron, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. So he has a long, I'm not sure if he has other Sfarim in here. It might only be his only Sefer in Hebrew. Sefer Perech Matei Aaron. His Rambam, his Kiddushim on the Rambam Sefer Hamada. And he has a long couple of pages about one of these dinim, about whether we consider Akums to be in all of the prohibitions that we talk about. And he's on the side of saying no. He's on the side of saying that we don't assume that they're Uvdei Avodah Zarah. He says, with really two reasons. Number one is Christianity may not be considered Avodah Zarah. Number two, consider Avodah Zarah, and therefore they would be considered like a Ger Toshav, subject to that Machlokas Rambam and Ravid. And the second idea is that they don't, you know, they're sort of just keeping Minhag Avosin V'Yadin, and they don't really believe in it anyways. All right, so that is, those are the two suggestions that he has, and he goes and he quotes, this is most famously attributed to the Meiri, but also he points out that others had this assumption throughout our history as well, and that being the case, perhaps the prohibition of Lotachanim would not apply to the standard non-Jew you would meet. It might still be applicable to, I made this distinction last night, it might still be applicable to institutions of Avodah Zarah or of Christianity. I mean, it's one thing to say that, oh, we don't have to worry about the regular Christian being an Oved Avodah Zarah. It's another thing to say that the whole church isn't Oved Avodah Zarah. I mean, that's a little bit more questionable. But that is the distinction that he makes, that being the case, so that perhaps there is no explicit prohibition in making these and selling the land in Eretz Yisrael, or B, paying a compliment, or C, what was the last one? The last point in the Gemara was selling them land. Oh, God, I can't believe I'm forgetting the other one. Giving them a free gift. So maybe it might not apply for this, but yet we still certainly during this season have to be in constant reminding of making sure that we do have separations and distinctions between Yisrael and between the Jewish people and non-Jews. Yes?
Everybody agrees that the seven nations...
Yes, the problem is we don't have seven nations anymore.
Seven nations?
We don't have them anymore. Our assumption is that any...
They all got annihilated?
No, we assume they all got mixed in. Yes, as Sam says, like this. False start.
So they could be anywhere. So anybody could be.
Yes. So we assume that Sancheirov king mixed everybody up. Wait a second. That means that they could be anywhere. Sancheirov was the king that came in. He's the one who exiled the 10 tribes.
Was he the Assyrian?
Yeah. So he exiled the 10 tribes. So wait a second. You can, if they're all mixed together, so then we have to be Choshesh. He said, no, they're Batal Barov. A Najah would be considered nullified in the majority. And therefore one has the right to be to assume that they're not it, which would apply across the board. Meaning more of a problem is then, well, do we have to worry about seven nations or a Mitzri or an Emorai, you know, or an Amuna, what do we have to worry about? All these restrictions. So we assume that one does not have to be concerned with that.
But it's clear that Islam is not Oved Chachom. Is that clear?
Yes, even the Rambam has a letter where he talks about Islam is not considered Oved Zarah, while Christianity is. It's a bit, that letter was actually written to a person who was a forced convert to Islam, and he is complaining. He's like, "What am I like? Woe unto me! I succumbed." And I was like, "No, don't feel so bad. It's not like the worst thing in the world." But yeah, okay, I'll stop here.
Can you clarify?